This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman produces it. Hi, it's John Williams. We're here until 1 o'clock. Anna DeVlantis after that. Let's start the show today with Jason Turner, the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management, wintrustwealth.com. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
We have been having several conversations in the last couple weeks as we continue to follow inflation, the index, and really the nuts and bolts of it, actual items and the prices by which they're going up. How do you see this? Is this natural? Is it the right amount of inflation? Should we be alarmed? What's your read on it right now?
My read right now, and we think of this in an analogy, we turned the spigot off last year in terms of consumer activity, and now with the vaccine progress and consumers getting back to spending, the spigot's wide open. And you would expect that we would have these supply chain disruptions where it's going to take the supply chain a little while to catch up. And you would expect that the year-over-year comparable to a period last year, last spring, where the economy was basically shut down to now where it's pretty much fully open, we would see things that would pop up in price. And you certainly saw the headline number come up, but things like used vehicles, new cars and trucks, furniture, and rising even more than that 5% print that we saw.
So are you saying that there's bona fide traditional inflation here, or is this just because of supply chain things that have everything to do with the pandemic and a ship stuck in the Suez Canal?
I think there's a lot of the latter and a little bit of the former. So a little bit of real inflation is starting to creep in here. And that would be the longer term worry, say 2022, 2023, that we see inflation run higher than wage growth over the longer term. In the short term, a lot of this looks like temporary or what the Fed would call transitory inflation.
So it makes people like me wonder then, what's the worst of this, right? Like, how bad can this get? Is this something to really concern ourselves with, or we're just watching it, but it's not going to get out of hand?
For right now, unless you are in one of the really hard hit industries that has seen a lot of supply chain inflation, this is uncomfortable but temporary. For those that are a little bit closer to things like home building, where lumber prices have soared over the last year and really a lot of the other input prices like appliances are now going higher too, it's a little more uncomfortable for those in that area, but that's not a level of uncomfort that is going to persist over the longer term unless we see inflation really start to tick higher towards the latter half of this year.
Is there an anecdote or a story you like to tell about what inflation or supply is like these days? We've all heard about the cost of lumber and what it means to a house, and chips absent from vehicles makes them harder to get. I'm amazed every now and then when someone tells me how long it takes them to get a sofa or a major appliance, right? If you're ordering it, I don't know that much about ordering furniture online, but I guess the wait is really remarkable these days.
It sure is, and I can tell you a personal anecdote. My wife and I spent our anniversary back in May shopping maybe for a new couch, and were surprised to learn that the soonest delivery was potentially November or December if we ordered that day. So needless to say, we did not buy a new couch yet. But
yeah. Really, you find something you love, and then 5 months later, hopefully you still love it. Were a lot of those purchases really being made because people were being given money to make them?
I think we had a lot of people that put off large purchases. You look at the things that have really seen some inflation impact in the last two prints, both April and May, things like new cars or used cars, appliances, furniture, these bigger ticket items that people didn't buy last year. Did not see inventories really ramp up over the last year as plants were shut down. So the inventory still sits in a quote-unquote normal state. And now you've got all the people that didn't buy last year, plus the people that were going to buy this year, all rushing out to the store to buy at the same time. And given more demand than supply, and these larger ticket items are harder to ramp up production on, it's going to have some price impact in the short term.
So all of this,
but in the long term, we should be back to an equilibrium price.
I'm sorry, I cut you off there. In the long term, we should be back to an equilibrium price. When do you think that happens?
It's going to be very specific to the individual items.
Yeah.
Things that take longer to produce or rely on more inputs are going to take longer to normalize. And think new cars and chips. If the chips get the supply picked back up and new car production can pick back up, That's something that can right itself in several months' time. But you know, something like lumber that has a longer lead time and has seen a dramatic increase in demand, it might take several months or even more than a year to get back to the prices we saw last January and February.
I need somebody to tell me what the cost of a wooden baseball bat is. I mean, that's lumber, but it's a single item, so there's no computer chips in it, so you can probably get one, but I didn't check on that. I wonder if wooden baseball bats, not the composites, have gone up. One last thing about all of this. Does this, all of this inflation talk, impact people on the lower end of the economic spectrum more? If a can of soup goes up a little bit, maybe they're not buying cars, but it's regressive enough that they'll feel the pinch more than people on the other end. Is that true?
Yes, that's absolutely true. If you're at the upper end of the spectrum, sure, you might be buying larger, bigger ticket items, but you also have the ability to put some of those purchases off. If you're at the lower end of the income spectrum and it is a can of soup or it's meat at the grocery store that's seen some price inflation, or it is a new appliance because your appliance died and you have to replace it, that becomes a more difficult purchase the more and more inflation we see. And the longer it persists, the more difficult it becomes for those at the lower end of the economic spectrum.
Dix has a Louisville Slugger for $30, by the way, $29.99. So if you're warned if you're going out for baseball bats. It's nice to talk to you today, Jason. Thanks for all the information.
Good to talk with you too, John.
Jason Turner is the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. Well, today's the day. Folks are out traveling around doing stuff a little freer than we were yesterday. You know, there's a new interactive tourist app. Think about that, an interactive tourist app that's launched. It's called eAtlas, and the president of that is a guy named John Matuszak. He joins us on the Business Lunch. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks so much for having me on your show today. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience about eAtlas, which has become my favorite subject and our central themes of fun, curiosity, and sharing.
Yeah. Well, you guys are launching in Chicago and the suburbs, right?
That is correct, sir.
So tell me a little bit about that. Is this a brand new app then, and Chicago is the first city?
Well, the app has been around for several years. eAtlas is a mobile app that enables people to participate in on-demand guided tours and treasure hunts from their phones. And these guided tours and treasure hunts, which we call eAtlas experiences, are built by our eAtlas World Guides, current and former tour guides. Anyone with deep knowledge and passion about a particular neighborhood, community, or place, might be about the art, might be about the history, the architecture, the local cuisine, but it's something that they want to share to the curious folks in that area.
So then what's new about it in Chicago?
What's new about it in Chicago is that we have built a whole new roster of high-caliber experiences, 33 to be exact, that are available across the city and in a few suburbs like Naperville, Libertyville, and the like. And we've assembled a community of woe guides, as we call them, who have some very interesting things to share about neighborhoods. It might be about the history of Bronzeville, might be an Art Deco tour in the city, might be a sculpture tour in the Loop, all sorts of different experiences for all sorts of different interests.
If I'm doing the treasure hunt, how does that work? Do I win prizes? Do I look for various things along the way? Well, how does that happen?
So the treasure hunts do have some prizes. Typically, those are arranged with local merchants. And it might be a coupon off of a slice of pizza at Sal's Pizza, for instance. And there's a leaderboard which keeps track of how long it takes the participants to get through the treasure hunt, and then we place them at the top of the leaderboard. But they're not looking for a particular thing like a QR code that's on a tree somewhere. It's more about learning about the stops along the way and the information they have about each stop, a particular statue, a particular building, that sort of thing.
The tours run 90 minutes to 3 hours. Do I see that correctly?
Yeah, actually, generally speaking, 45 minutes to 2 hours. They're walking tours and treasure hunts in all cases. Some can be drivable, but are primarily meant to be walked. And we have a map built into the app itself, which helps people navigate their way through the tour. And it also allows you to do neat things, like you might be on Navy Pier, you're at the eastern edge of the pier, and there's that big anchor there. You can take a selfie from in front of that anchor, and then you can post that to Facebook, show all your friends or any number of the people that you'd like within your Facebook, you know, news story or my feed.
So the tour is happening as an app on my phone. So am I watching somebody and they're talking to me, or is it just a guided thing where I follow a little line? How do I interact with it?
Yeah, so it's a multimedia mix. There'll be, for a given stop, there might be a video clip where someone's explaining something about a particular statue at that stop. It might be an audio clip where they're explaining why a given building looks the way it does or the history of that building. It might be sort of a puzzle where they're asking a question, on what date was this building built? And then we give various hints that help people answer that question. And the guided tour side, it's often more of informational in nature. Could again be video clips, audio clips, text, pictures, but it's not a live person. The WOE guide, the EATLAS WOE guide, has in advance prepared all the material on the EATLAS platform, and then the app displays that experience, makes it available to folks.
So do I pay for the app, or is the app free, and then via that I pay for the individual tours?
The app is entirely free and available on the App Store for Apple phones and the Play Store for Android devices. The experiences themselves, some number of them are free. Others are for a fee. It ranges anywhere from $0 to $30, but typically about $10 per experience.
$10 per experience. So how's it going? How has it been in other cities? And what do you expect? What are the hot spots that people will be touring in the city?
Well, our marketing launch is just getting started a few weeks back. We chose Chicago because we're all Chicagoans and lived here our whole lives. And we spent some time over the past 2 years refining the app, building out the platform, and then began recruiting, if you will, our EATLAS WOE guides. And we were not surprised, but very pleased to learn that there's a large number of people with great insight into the city and aspects of it, and they get to share what they love. And perhaps as importantly, we share the revenue with that. So each EATLAS experience purchased, 70% of the purchase price goes back to the EATLAS WOE guide that built it.
So maybe I want to do that. Who are these guides then? Are they people I will know, or just really smart people who happen to know the city?
Unless you're conversant with the local tour guide community, if you will, it's unlikely you would know them. But folks who know the tour guides in the area might know some of them. And they're people who have spent a lot of time acquiring a lot of very interesting information about various parts of the city. We have a lady named Alicia who's built a tour of Bronzeville. A lot of information about African-American history there. She's a former tour bus operator, right? And decided she'd try this. We've got folks who are fascinated by doorways and the architecture of workers' cottages. They've built tours about that. It's really endless the number of applications that EATLAS can be applied to. Mm-hmm. And we really rely on the ingenuity and the passion of our WOE guides. And then we'll also, of course, rely on how do people out there respond. Do they sort of move toward the Millennium Park tours or the Navy Park tours? Or do they prefer the more niche tours about Art Deco or art sculpture in the Loop?
You know, it's interesting. It reminds me a little bit about how many different podcasts there are out there. And some of them are very niche, very narrow. And you think, well, who would enjoy that or listen to that? But there is a population for it. And so you can listen to a podcast about the interior design of airport terminals. And they drop a pod each week. Yours could be similarly niche or broad-based, couldn't it be? If you want to tour that, we've got a tour for it.
Exactly. So our idea all along was to create the means, the tools, if you will, that would enable people to share what they love. Yeah. And we didn't want to try to direct them in a particular area. We thought we should give them the opportunity to apply their creativity, their ingenuity, what they're passionate about, make that available to folks. And then over time, we'll learn, okay, architecture is actually very hot in Chicago. maybe we should try to encourage our world guides to build more architecture tours. Or we may learn that it's about food. We've even had ideas about date nights. We had one person think that, well, this might be a great way to propose to their fiance.
Right? Oh,
the
yeah.
The applications are truly endless.
Yeah, John Matuszak is the president of eAtlas. Yeah, a tour of great sites to propose. I'm thinking of this place where my son proposed to my daughter-in-law, and it was magnificent. John Matuszak, president of eAtlas. Visit playeatlas.com. John, congrats. Good luck. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John. I really appreciate it.
Now that we are able to just this day come out, what did you think about all of the Zoom calls you were involved in? At first, we thought Zoom was like a miracle, and then we came to hate it. And the lapse in time was about 7 minutes. So what about this? Another way to communicate with your employees instead of Zoom calls, I'm telling you, our guest is about to say it should be via podcast. Think about that. Dana Elmquist is here, president of Fieldcast. Fieldcast.co is the site. Hey, Dana, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
Is that the right setup on this?
That is absolutely the right setup.
I'm intrigued. To talk a little bit about that, what does your company do? Do you produce podcasts or tell companies how to better produce their own podcasts?
Yes, and we also offer a secure content distribution network, all our technology, so that the company can securely basically talk to all of their employees wherever they are domestically or even globally. We have a production facility to coach folks and make them sound as good as you do every day on the air. And then also the content delivery network to let them distribute securely to all of their employees.
And to be clear, a podcast is not video, right? We're talking audio, or is there a video component somehow?
We're talking audio only, and the power of audio is really profound. I mean, it's an active medium. We offer our clients a time-shifted way to reach their employees, and by time-shifted, I mean they can listen when and where they want. They can listen on the go as they're coming into the office. They can listen after they put the kids to sleep, and just like you did in your setup. And I think these, whether it's Zoom or another video conferencing system, they've just filled our calendar with appointments. And this actually frees your employees to listen when and where they want and listen intentionally to the mission and the context that you can provide.
How do you know the employees are going to do that?
We measure it. We have an analytics dashboard that shows, you know, how they listen, how far they listen, whether they're listening or not. And then we can take those analytics and go back to our clients and say, hey, this is working. This isn't. You should heavy up here. But, you know, just like any good enterprise software technology, everything is measured. Everything's about more productivity, more sense of mission, more sense of culture, and just giving people in the C-suite a glimpse into how people consume content and their employees and their stakeholders.
Everybody listens to podcasts these days. We produce some pretty good ones here at WGN, but that's because we have people that are pretty good at doing podcasts. If I'm in the business of making widgets, maybe I'm a good widget guy. How am I going to learn to make a compelling podcast?
Well, there's two things. So we have almost 30 producers on staff. Some are Peabody Award winners. Some are Edward R. Murrow Award winners. And they coach folks in a range of different industries. We're active in every sector of the S&P right now. So the use case is broad. I mean, if you're in medicine, if you're in health and hospitals, CPG, automotive, even manufacturing, we've been able to get people to sound wonderful and like they're in the ears of their employees. And their employees write back to us. They write back to leadership and they say, I feel like I have a personal relationship with the CEO now. That's a really profound thing.
So can you give me an example of what kind of information is conveyed? Is it the Monday morning sales meeting? Is it an update to staff on new procedures? What kind of information is conveyed?
A lot of sales updates, product updates. And then, you know, there are a lot of things that have happened in the world in the last year. A lot of folks are talking about inclusion and diversity initiatives, big nuanced things that they need to explain in context and detail so that their employees really understand everything about it and sort of the why behind the decision making.
How chatty are these? Should they be, you know, casual and conversational, or should it be bullet points?
They should be casual and conversational. Personal anecdotes are great. because I think employees are really yearning to learn about the people behind the company and the decisions that they live with every day.
I'm listening to you and I'm thinking that makes sense, but I'm also hearing in my head some of the meetings where the guy's just going on and you're like, dude, cut, streamline, let's make this. How much information do you really have to convey here and then convey that and minimize the extraneous? It's a balancing act, isn't it, Dana?
It's a balancing act, and that's where the producers come in. I mean, we rarely recommend something beyond 20 minutes. Typically, 18 to 22 minutes is our sweet spot. And you can say a lot in that amount of time. You can say a lot in half that amount of time. And that's where great editing comes in. Sorry.
No, pardon me. 10 to 22 minutes. Attention, people running meetings. I wonder if we can do that when we come back into the offices then. Do you think that a vestige of this will be the streamlined meeting at work?
I certainly hope so. I mean, it's all about more productivity and letting people get back to what they do and helping them do it better. You know, I think the use case for this is really about people having a ton of stuff going on in their lives, work and family, and balancing all these things. You know, we spend a lot of time in meetings. It can always be shorter and it can always be more concise.
According to a study, you told my producer, Pete, of 1,500 participants, more than 83% of the employed population would like to receive company updates via podcast. 78% want to hear from company leadership via podcast. Maybe that's kind of fun, too, for the boss or whoever's doing this. Hey, I do a podcast. Maybe they would like to convey the information that way and free themselves up, frankly, from the camera.
I think so. You know, it's certainly, we don't need lights and makeup. You can do it from home. You can, all you really need is a stable internet connection, a decent microphone, and a system such as ours to record a studio quality professional podcast. It's very easy. Once folks get the hang of it, they love it.
Okay. It's called Fieldcast. That makes sense. Dan Elmquist, president of Fieldcast. The website, if you're surfing around, is fieldcast.co. Nice to talk to you, Dana. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure to talk to you. Thank you again.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:44. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Two Chicago area sellers have made it to a list of the nation's highest volume real estate agents. Sarah Leonard of REMAX Suburban and Don McKenna of Coldwell Banker are ranked in the top 10 for their category in a report compiled by real estate industry analyst Real Trends. According to Cranes, Leonard ranked sixth nationally among medium-sized teams for the number of sales. McKenna's team of 18 agents ranked 10th nationwide for large teams' dollar value. Their teams produced $530 million in combined sales in 2020. McDonald's says hackers stole customer data and employee data from its systems and markets, including South Korea and Taiwan. The company says customer and personal employee data in the U.S. were not compromised in that attack. Unagi Scooters has expanded to Chicago. Unlike the usual rent-to-ride model, Unagi rents scooters for months at a time. Customers are charged a flat monthly fee of $49 or $468 per year with unlimited access to a single Unagi scooter. Unagi has also launched in nearby suburbs like Aurora, Joliet, Elgin, Evanston, Arlington Heights, and Cicero. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now with the business of jerky. Here's Steve Alexander. Yeah. That was a fun little bit. I'm glad you reminded us of that.
Yeah, National Jerky Day tomorrow, John. Today is something different, though. By the way, it's also Mr. Fizz Friday. But before I bring him in to talk about all of the business of growing your own food and other things, it is National Corn on the Cob Day. It's early, though, for this area. I texted Dave Wolf, the sweet corn king of Kankakee, who sells to Chicago restaurants, and he says his first planting should be ready to go the second week of July. And I'll bet the rest of the sweet corn growers around the area, like Twin Garden Farms, are not that far behind. There is plenty of other food being harvested in the Chicago area, though.
We have quite a bit of stuff. First of all, chives. We've been harvesting chives, green onions. Strawberries are good right now. In fact, it's getting pretty well in the middle of the season for strawberries around here. Some of the beans are already beginning to be available. patio type or salad type tomatoes, the little tiny grape tomatoes, and of course greens.
Okay, Mr. Fizz, but what's wrong with my trees?
You know, I get a lot of people asking why my trees have not made leaves yet. In fact, one neighbor asked, is this tree dead? Well, there are several possible reasons. Actually, there are leaves on there, and they're little tiny ones. They're just way late. Some of the honey locusts have been attacked by a bug called the honey locust plant bug. Now, as soon as these little bugs fly off to make new eggs and new bugs for next year, the leaves have come out. Some of the maple trees, some lindens, and some other trees have had tremendous seed crops this year. And when these trees make seeds that are taking all the nourishment from the tree, they don't make leaves. You need to be patient. The leaves will begin to come out, and you'll find the trees are perfectly fine for the rest of the season.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. I learned something new every time with him. Yesterday's USDA supply and demand report was bullish for corn. Now, that was yesterday. Today, corn is down about 14 cents a bushel. Beans are down 36, and wheat is down about 3. Analysts say there's a lot of profit-taking going on here at the end of the week. Along with Sweet Corn Day, it's also National German Chocolate Cake Day, which did not, as I believe for decades, did not originate in Germany. An American chocolate maker named Sam German came up with it in 1852. That's the business of food and jerky on 720 WGN.
Perfectly timed with the coming out in Chicago. Look at that. The Hilton's back at it. John G. Wells is the Hilton Chicago General Manager, and he joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, John. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Hello, John. Thanks for having me.
I presume you're pretty busy over there today. I think, what was it, yesterday was the opening, right?
Yeah, we opened our doors about 8 o'clock, and our first customer rolled through about 9:30.
Did they realize that they were the first customer?
No, not at all. Not until I stepped up and introduced myself and let them know.
And said, behold, 3,000 rooms to choose from, sir. Which can we give you?
I wish we were 3,000 again. We only have 1,544 now.
but I was reading about that. When it first opened up, it was 3,000 and was the largest hotel in the world, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. 1927, the Stevens family built the world's largest hotel. And in 1985, we went through a massive renovation and reduced that inventory down to 1,544. But the really fun thing about that, John, is that 600 of those rooms still have two bathrooms.
Wow. What does that tell me? That they're big rooms or that that's the way it used to be? What's that mean?
No, basically, when it was 3,000 rooms, the rooms were much smaller. And when we went through that massive renovation in 85, they basically took those walls out, but they decided to leave a lot of the bathrooms. So essentially, there's two beds, two bathrooms, two closets, one door.
Nice. So what's it like now? How long was the hotel shut down then for the pandemic?
Nearly 15 months.
The whole time, huh? You guys weren't able to do a soft reopening with distance or something like that?
No, I think yesterday kind of is a good interpretation of a soft opening, because we can't get to, you know, really opening 1,544 rooms overnight. It's going to be a process for us to get that many rooms. We have five floors open right now.
And then you also need five floors of demand. What do you anticipate on that end?
Well, it looks like, believe it or not, it looks like over the 4th of July weekend and the following weekend, which is the Nike tournament, which is down at McCormick Place, we're going to need nine floors at least by the July 4th weekend.
You know, John, I'll bet you're very happy about that. Do you have any idea how good that makes us feel? I mean, really, that is a bellwether of our returning to Chicago and life in the city.
Oh, yeah. I think once the governor and mayor announced the auto show was happening in July, everything, all the dominoes started to fall then. It just sent a signal out to the big, large groups and convention community that Chicago's open. And my hotel, I have 235,000 square feet of meeting space. So I'm a mini convention center as it is. And all my groups were confirming. I have group business already in August, and September and October look really strong.
So you've partnered with Cameo, the Chicago greeting company. I guess that's one way to describe them, the video and audio chat people that will let you get celebrities to give greetings to friends. What are you going to be doing with them?
Well, it's a great partnership. And one of the packages that we actually built is called the Pillow Talk with a Celebrity Package. It also features, you know, staying in our Imperial Suite, which is up on the top floor. Those were built originally for Queen Elizabeth's arrival in 1959. But that package includes, it's just a mere $20,000. And it includes a 10-minute live Zoom call with a celebrity of their selection in the comfort of the newly redesigned Imperial Suite.
That's a good idea. That's just fun. How many employees are you hiring back then? What do you anticipate down the road?
Well, we had 1,000 team members pre-pandemic. While we were through the pandemic, we only had about 50. And now we're up to 200.
Gosh, I'm glad to hear that. I was looking at some of the other numbers about what happens when you shut down a house or a hotel for a period of time. You got to flip the mattresses. You might need to freshen the rooms up. You got to change all the batteries and all the smoke alarms. What was the number? 34,000 batteries had to be changed out?
37,000 batteries. And if you lined them all up, it almost reaches to the Drake Hotel from here.
But don't go there. Stay at the Hilton. Although you are, I don't know, are you a brotherhood? Do you wish the best for all of the hotels in the city?
Absolutely. Well, with the Drake Hotel and the Palmer House and myself, we're all managed by Hilton. So, you know, I'm good friends with those general managers. And, we wish everyone well, because during the pandemic, over 15,000 rooms were suspended in the market because of the pandemic. And now it looks like almost everyone is going to be opening in the next couple of weeks.
I have literally 30 seconds left. Do you recommend that people come down and check out the hotel for a drink or for dinner, or are you not ready for that yet?
Well, we have our grab-and-go open right now. We have Kitty O'Shea's is going to be open on the 17th, so for sure, that's going to be the spot.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time there. We've done a lot of functions at the Hilton here at WGN Radio, the Kathy and Judy Convention, the Cubs Convention, things like that. So we know that spot well, sir. That's another good sign that we're getting back to normal.
Oh, yes. Yep. Thanks John, for having me on today.
Yeah, John, congratulations. Good luck to everybody over there. Pass along our best.
I will. Thank you so much.